Hello and welcome to another episode of Dice Exploder. Each week, we take a tabletop RPG mechanic out for a photo shoot. My name is Sam Dunnewald, and I am kickstarting a third season of Dice Exploder. It's going to be in October, and you can go onto your phone right now and follow the launch page for the upcoming Kickstarter for the third season of Dice Exploder to get notified when it goes live. I've already got most of the third season lineup all locked in, and it is full of people I can't wait to talk to. You are going to love it. Go follow the page, and I'll have more info for you soon. But this is still the second season of Dice Exploder, and this week, my co-host is Tan Xiao Han. Last season, Pampoon Salon put Xiao on my radar when I asked them for co-host recommendations, and then I heard this great interview with Xiao on the Yes Indeed podcast with Thomas Manuel about the history of Singapore and World War II, and how Xiao is making games about it, and a bunch of other stuff. And then there's Xiao's credits, Pathfinder 2nd Edition, Ark, Monster Care Squad, the upcoming Dagger Isle supplement for Blades in the Dark, and all the work he's cooking up on his own. Plus, the guy's just fun to talk to. Xiao brings us the stress mechanic from Brinkwood by Eric Bernhardt, a Forged in the Dark game about a world where you're poor and the vampires are rich and you go kill the heck out of them. And this is one of those episodes where to talk about the mechanic in question, we kind of have to talk about the whole ass game around it, because so much of Brinkwood is tied up in stress. And in this case, we really have to talk about two whole ass games, because so much of what makes Brinkwood stress interesting is how a few small tweaks from Blades in the Dark by John Harper ripple out through the design and lead to big changes in play. Harm, trauma, bands and scars, recovery. Get ready for the full fire hose of mechanics, baby. This is an episode of real delicious, crunchy examples, if ever there was one. Now, here is Tan Xiao Han with Stress from Brinkwood. Xiao, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much. I'm like really happy to be here.
So what game and mechanic have you brought for us today?
I've been thinking about and working a lot with Brinkwood, The Blood of Tyrants. It's built on Forged in the Dark, and there's some things that it changes quite significantly. And it's a game about basically Robin Hood-type peasants who broker deals with ancient fey forces to kill the vampires that rule their land. So it's pretty much a eat the rich and drink their blood kind of game, yeah.
Yeah. Eat the rich, they're literally vampires.
Yeah.
And it, as you said, it's like a hack of Blades in the Dark, right? So I think today we're going to be doing a lot of comparing the mechanic you brought from Brinkwood to the way it originally works in Blades in the Dark, and how those things are different, and the small changes there can kind of make a big difference.
Yeah.
So what mechanics specifically did you bring from Brinkwood?
I think that's what I'm going to work with a lot, is this thing of stress.
And yeah.
I mean, stress is a big bundle. I mean, like real life, right? Stress is always a big bundle of related issues. But like the stress mechanic here will probably interact with a lot of things. It'll interact with essence, which is another mechanic that exists in Brinkwood. You also look a little bit at how harm, which is like some have stated it's a notoriously tricky to decide harm in most traditional Forged in the Dark games. So it will look a bit at equipment and gear as well, because all that ties in together into the big ball of stress that we have. So it's mostly about stress and its related quantities.
Yeah. So I'm going to start by walking through stress as I understand it in Blades in the Dark, because I've read Brinkwood, but I have never actually played it. So in Blades in the Dark, the way stress works is it's sort of like your hit points in like a Dungeons and Dragons. It's a numerical resource that you have a limited number of, and you can spend stress for cool effects. You can spend stress for bonus dice on your rolls. You can spend stress to improve your position or effect, which is sort of, you know, the effectiveness of whatever action you're taking. You can spend stress to give other people bonus dice by helping them. And you can spend stress to resist consequences, which is a whole episode unto itself, but it's basically like making consequences so they don't happen to you. It's the game sanctioned takesies backsies. So you have 8 stress, and if you ever get to 8 stress, then you are taken out of the scene that you're in. You receive a trauma which stays with your character forever. You can never lose your traumas, and you come back later, you know, a little worse for wear, but with all of your stress intact. Then the way you get rid of stress is during downtime when you're not like on a big heist, you go and you indulge your vice, you go get a new tattoo or you go gamble or whatever the thing is that makes you feel less stressed and you recover your stress, you get it back so you can go back in there and make some more bad choices that turn into stressful situations later.
Mm.
Missing anything? That sound about right?
I think that sounds well right. There might be a little bit that comes in about for like how they play with the currency, because stress is pretty much, as you know, like the take back these currencies for consequences, for improving your chances narratively. And I think Brinkwood kind of like plays around with giving kind of like a secondary budget for that kind of stress thing. So of course, I'll talk about that in more details when it becomes relevant. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's just start a little bit by talking about the baseline Blades stress mechanic. Like, what do you like about stress in Blades? And is there anything you don't like about stress in Blades?
I guess intuitively, I'll start with the thing that I have some difficulties with when I mentioned stress. Mm-hmm. Like, I play Blades like games because I'm trying to make a solitary or small group Blades inspired historical RPG. And I have a lot of playtests with people who don't usually play any TTRPGs, of whose TTRPG experience is basically linked to the D20 engines, right? And they get really stressed by the word stress. So, because stress is something which we have a budget, right? We can spend it until we reach a certain kind of state, and then we kind of like just exit stage left and we get out of the scene, basically, for the rest of the session. But for some players, I've noticed like the stress point is, oh no, stress is something that I don't want to accumulate. So instead of being a resource that you see depleting, so instead of like, hi, we start with 9 stress and you're minusing off stress points as you go down, instead you're adding to the stress, which I think is the whole thematic focus because you're adding more stress to your back, right? But like I've seen a bit of a minor chilling effect from players who usually takes them a few sessions to encourage them to use stress. So you have people not wanting to push themselves, not wanting to do things. So I think like if we were to use that most dreaded of words, you know, that the whole lunar narrative connection thing, it's like, I do feel like there is a bit of a, oh, this might feel a bit bad. It's a mechanic that might be intimidating or might drive a person to feel bad for some new players. So that's my negative read at first for stress,
Intimidating is a great word for it,
Yeah, and I think like what I do like about stress is it's essentially very clear accounting, because I like two things about stress. I like how basically you can actually activate and use it when you wish to. So let's say I'm in an argument, right? Somebody shouting at me, and do I pay the stress to shout back and deny their account of events, right? And maybe I decide, you know, it's not worth it, because I'll just take maybe the mental, psycho, emotional harm and just go away and I'll deal with it.
Yeah.
But I leave the stress for something else. So I always have a bit of a clear clarity of like, as a story gamer, of like, okay, this is what I need to do. Can I afford this? Can I not afford this? So the transparency of that is a lot clearer than a lot of the other story games that I was used to playing, because it's a clear quantifiable amount. And the other thing I like about stress is there's a refresh mechanic at the end of a session. So you can going to do downtime for default Blades and go around and engage in your vices and stuff, and you can always reset, so you're kind of functionally immortal as long as you kind of know your limits. So again, I think it does appeal to maybe higher proficiency players to be able to, all right, I can kind of like map out what is the dramatic range of what I'm going to do for this couple hours of games or 3 hours of games, as opposed to maybe somebody who's playing more, I guess, more directly, immersively, rather than like, okay, I'm going to do this. Oh no, I don't have enough resources. Oh no, I'm scared of using resources. So I do see, like, I guess, to sum up, the good thing and the bad thing. The good thing is that in the hands of players who are very, I guess, skilled almost dramaturgically in the structure of how many events should happen in the session of play, I think this car drives really well. But for people who might be a bit like, okay, I'm playing it in an immersion sense, like, you know, they play like they're playing D&D. This is me there, I'm someone there. Then usually I do encounter a degree of stress about the stress mechanic. Yeah.
I want to throw out there, I agree with all of that. The other thing I really love and appreciate about stress is how much it puts agency in the hands of the players. Like when you're comparing to something like hit points, like I did earlier, hit points are this number that you have that gets taken away from you when the GM does stuff to you. Mm. But stress is a mechanic that you always have control over. You are always the one who decides when am I going to spend stress? When am I going to increase my role? When am I going to reduce consequences? Now, there's variance, there's randomness in how much stress it might cost you to do the resisting consequences. So sometimes it's not exactly in your hands whether you're going to come out okay, but it's always your choice, not someone else's choice, to make that gamble. And I think that that is really empowering for players and just really a cool way to frame playing an RPG.
Yeah. Like that agency, right? They say that player directed, hey, you know, I'm going to fall out of this. I'm going to stand up to this. It's not like you're forced to basically work on it. And it's a resource that's very clear that, yeah, I mean, the HP analogy is really the best one for me, I think, because it's not like, all right, you don't have a hugely inflated pool of HP in which you can, all right, here's some damage for free. Yay. You know, like the way that some games go is like, the mood is getting low and you have 60 hit points and here, take 10 damage randomly just to communicate that there's a threat and to kind of like change the mood, right? There isn't really that space to do that random nickel and diming, in my opinion, of like resources, in which, hey, it's very agentive. You spend the one stress, you spend the two stress because you want to,
Yeah, you're getting at something else interesting about stress there, which is you only ever have 8 stress, and so every single one matters.
Mm.
You don't have stress to burn very often, and I think that feels a lot better than, or it doesn't necessarily feel better, but it feels very different from the sort of power fantasy of ending up with 120 hit points eventually, or whatever you're going to end up with in Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
So, cool. Tell me about what's different about stress and the stress system in Brinkwood.
Okay, so before Blades, to use as a comparison, there's also this separation of stress and harm, right? So that's a very technical term there, harm. And when I first started playing Blades, I think when it was released a few years ago, it was a bit of a difficulty for me to wrap around, all right, so which one is more important, stress or harm? And like harm does have some effects on you. So like to give my example of somebody having arguments, so somebody shouts at me, levels accusations at me, and I decide, do I want to spend some stress by resisting it? Or do I want just to absorb this scoldings and just go away with a bruised ego? And in some games, they may quantify the harm of a bruised ego, of the hurt feelings, as maybe a level 1 harm, a level 2 harm. Maybe I go away and I get demoralized, have a bad day. So in Blades, you do have this need to basically figure out what is harm and what is stress. So in Brinkwood, one of the things they do that makes it a bit clearer for me, personally, when I'm thinking in terms of design and thinking in terms of running the game, is that they make stress and harm the same. There's a bit of a unified system. So when you have an injury, you resist something that happens to you, you basically have to fill up a stress track. So you don't have to have two sets of resources to work with. You don't have a stress bunch, you don't have a harm bunch, because it goes back to your stress bar as well. So you have only one resource meter to keep track of for this game. So the example for it is you have a resistance roll and like default Blades, in which you basically try to resist bad things happening to your character that you would prefer not to happen. And in Blades, it's like whenever you do a resistance roll, you have to spend an amount of stress, which is based on how high you roll. So the higher you roll in the resistance, the lower amount of stress you have to pay. And what happens in Brinkwood is that when you have injuries and harm, that stress just wraps back over to the stress shot rather than you having to worry about, okay, you have to mark in 2 more harm points, which makes, I think, the running a lot easier. Which, of course, from a numbers perspective, the danger is that, okay, does that mean that we'll fill up with stress a lot higher? Because now you're burning the candles on both ends, right? Because it's like you're using stress for all your usual enhancement abilities, using stress to resist. And now when harm does happen to you, it goes to your stress as well. So there's this thing called bands, and it's kind of like a slush fund, I guess. It's kind of like this, like a shady bunch of resources you can draw in addition to not actually suffer the stress that you take from harm. So it's kind of like maybe you swear an oath to the fairies, to the fae folk, and like, I will no longer wear the color red. And then like basically, instead of maybe taking a death-dealing blow that will drive you over the edge of a severe harm, you can't wear or use anything red or something like that for the rest of until you do some appropriate pleasing of the spirits, and then they let you put red back in your wardrobe. So basically, I think that's how it kind of like encourages you to basically interact with the mysterious forces that you broker deals from. They kind of push you through stress into bands.
Yeah, I really love the way bands read. It's just like a couple other examples. Like we have iron, all blades. Like you can't use bladed weapons anymore. Or eventually you get up into like laughter. You're not allowed to laugh, which is like a cool flavor thing in itself. But also you're not allowed to like use the consort action anymore.
Yeah, you can't be emotionally warm, right? Because you can't laugh, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that feels so flavorful in this game that it's so reminiscent of the lore and mythology of making a deal with a fairy or of how to deal with a fairy. Like you are the fairy and you have just created the like mythological weakness for yourself that someone else could come hold against you.
Yeah. A big part of it is because you mentioned the mythological aspect. I think this creates a more elusive kind of feeling. So it's like what Blades players, the experienced Blades players do, right? They try to get a trauma or something in the first session so that they can use it to mark XP for the rest of
That's
the campaign,
me.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. You want exactly one trauma. You get that first trauma as quickly as you can, and then you never get another one. That's the goal.
Yeah. So like the emergent playstyle, I'm not sure that was the original like plan in mind.
Yeah.
But if you look at this, this allows us to evoke and describe with some distance, because now it's the safety point of, hey, there's a spirit who did it rather than there's somebody else. And so like in a more emotionally sensitive table, it's like, all right, this person gave up his ability to laugh for the cause, right? And this person is maybe a new parent and then they gave up all their chances to laugh because they gave themselves. And there's something both terrifying, tragic, and also that's gamey, I feel, which is a strength, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's something so evocative about what a band can be, where, you know, trauma, I think, is evocative. You know, adding the adjective paranoid to your character is interesting, and then you get XP for playing into your trauma and acting paranoid. Cool, it works totally fine. But getting something as specific as you can no longer laugh is, there's room for a lot more of those on one character, and they're just so specific in this really inspiring way.
Yeah, and that kind of like really does a lot of the world building work behind the scene. Because once you do that, you know that, all right, this is a world which requires fairies to run around. For this to make sense, it could be elder gods, it could be ancestor spirits. But this is a world where some kind of larger than life entity is out there that grants you resources in exchange for behavioral modifications, basically.
Yeah. I really love everything you were saying earlier about harm in Brinkwood 2, because harm I have found to be a notoriously hard to hack part of Blades. Like a lot of people don't like the way it works normally. It's just pretty harsh. And I just see a lot of people trying to find something new. And I have seen very few people find something new that feels really good. And Brinkwood, I love. It's like, don't worry about that stuff. Just mark a couple of stress. We know your leg is broken. Move on with your life. Like, that's not the important thing that this game is about. Instead, we're going to combine the trauma and this like new harm system into this new, more flavorful thing that is going to feel less in the way than harm does, I think, a lot of the time in Blades.
Yeah, yeah. It's like in my head, it's really like considered like a grand unification theory of sorts. It's like, hey, we've wrapped harm and stress and we kind of put it around and we shunted all the excess heat, like all the breakdown points into bands and scars. So the cognitive load gets reduced because band is a separate resource. But now it does feel a lot more like you don't have that cognitive load of, do I really want to break my leg? Because the minus one die, you can't do anything, you push yourself, requires assistance. One of the things I do like about Blades is the teamwork aspect, in which even new players come in, they're like, oh, it's always cheaper for me to help someone than for me to push myself. So people quickly kind of figure out that helping each other is one of the design pathways for success in Blades, right? And I think like with the way that harm works in Brinkwood, it becomes like, oh, all right, I can help you, but at a cost of maybe reducing my own resources. But I don't have to worry about anything else. So even though it looks like you're paying more at the beginning, I do feel that the lack of having that whole, all right, minus one dice, can't do anything else. Someone helps you, they can't save harm. It does create a much more larger than life superheroic kind of for players,
Yeah, I just want to be clear on my feelings about harm in Blades, where I think there is often an interesting choice to be made about, do I want to spend stress or do I want my leg to be broken? Like, do I want to take the harm or not? You talked about that a bunch earlier.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think oftentimes at my table, people have ended up just feeling bad for ending up with harm that feels oppressive and like it sticks around forever. Mm-hmm. And it maybe doesn't make sense that like I took this level one harm that I got drunk and then the rules say it doesn't go away until I invest a lot of time in it, when really yeah. it should just go away when I'm not drunk anymore. Or the same thing with more severe harm. Like, why isn't this going away on its own? Like, even if there's good answers to that, the harm system has often felt like it drags people down as opposed to giving them cool new restrictions to play with, like bands do in Brinkwood.
Yeah, it does feel a bit like a player like, yeah, I want to get drunk, hit me. And it's like, yeah, so now you've slept with this level one harm. And then they found that, oh my God, it's so painful. Is that the penalty? Yeah. And I was just doing this as a role-playing flourish. I was doing this as an immersive thing. And now it might lead to that repeating chilling effect of, let's not role-play any of our character quirks and let's just do something really cautiously, which I think is one of the dangers of any kind of traditional story game, where it kind of encourages us to take a step back into back in like Fate, for example, like, okay, how does my aspect cover this? So it's like, it gets into this like very strategic composition of how to fit things over to stuff, right? And I feel like in Blades, I was running a lot of Band of Blades for a while, and it does fit Band of Blades because Band of Blades is a gritty, literary horror strategy. So yeah,
it's so much about that horrible harm situation.
Yeah, it's horrible harm. It's like, yeah, somebody spat stomach acid at you and now you're infected with undeath. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. But when I'm running something like Scum and Villainy, for example, which is it's kind of like Star Wars with a serial number fought off, right? It's like, you're supposed to be larger than life rogues, and Blades in the Dark, you're also kind of larger than life rogues. But it does sometimes have that feeling, like, oh no, we're larger life rogues, but we can't take a bender.
Yeah.
We can't take a few drinks, right? So it does sometimes lead to this bit of a whiplash for harm, yeah.
Yeah, I like the word whiplash for it. Yeah. So you said the word scars in there at one point.
Yes.
I just want to say that scars are just bands that have become permanent. Typically, bands go away on their own, but if you go in extra over your head and end up in real trouble, they can become permanent and require a lot of work to get rid of, right?
Yeah. So that's kind of like basically the hardening of the behavioral modification, right? It's a permanent feature of me that has to be removed through severe effort. Yeah.
Sanguis populi. The blood of the people. The dark protectors of the hidden city of Azeroth, deep within the illusory forest. Familiar with death as they have eluded it, they are called upon for a desperate task. Slaying a creature from the great beyond. Blythe.
This might not be easy, being surrounded by death. I don't understand how they can do it.
Elvira.
Someone must watch the bodies, and none do so as diligently.
Swan.
Into action so fast. I love when we get to go out.
It came from the sky. This great, pale monstrosity.
You just had to sate your hunger. You couldn't have saved it for the beasts.
I prefer the gratuity.
Vampirism is not immortality. It only prolongs the inevitable. Is this the end for Sanguis Populi? Blood in the snow. A tale yet told. Halloween 2025.
Sorceress, lower the barrier for just a moment. Sanguis Populi departs.
Listen to Tale Is Yet Told wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's talk about how you get rid of stress in both of these games. So in Blades, as I said, like the way you recover your stress is by going out during downtime and carousing around or indulging your vice, whatever that happens to be. But I actually don't remember how you get rid of it in Brinkwood. What's the deal in Brinkwood?
So in Brinkwood, thematically and tonally speaking, for stress, it goes like this. So what happens is there's two things. One is reconnect and recover. So these are moves that you do during downtime actions. So reconnect is you narrate how your character spends their time resting and reconnecting in their bonds, whereas we're visiting a favorite place, spending time with friends and family, or by practicing a relaxing hobby. Where reconnect, roll a number of dice equals to your lowest attribute and remove stress from a stress track equal to the highest dice roll. So it's a bit similar, mechanically speaking, to indulging your vices. But thematically speaking, the main difference will be that, number one, your character doesn't have to declare an overwhelming vice at the beginning of character creation. Instead, the main thing you have to describe is the thing known as a bond, which is, I guess, your social bonds, your emotional bonds. And so bonds could be basically to people, places, pastimes, or something else. And in Blades, I do get this problem with the vices because people will be like, but I don't want to have a vice. And I think Brinkwood basically dodges that by maneuvering it over to center on community and to center on psychological and emotional, taking a break, wellness, rather than the hair of the dog, right? Rather than, okay, how do you get rid of problems? I drink more. And that's so like basically the reconnection rather than isolation. Because in Blades, a lot of it is you could go on such a huge wild bender that you disappear and you are not available for a couple of sessions for that character. But so that's isolation as a team. But in Brinkwood, it's reconnection as a team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the indulging vice makes a lot of thematic sense for Blades. I think it fits into that world well, and it builds out the scoundrel kind of character that you're playing.
Like you've got ghosts everywhere. Nobody can actually really die peacefully. And then
you want me to live in this world sober? Like, come on.
Yeah, I mean, like, you would be pretty much high all the time to get rid of all of the stress, right? Yeah.
And Blades also, like, to its credit, has this mechanic where you get a bonus die on any downtime roll, including indulging vice, where you bring a friend along. So it is encouraging you to at least involve other people in your indulging of vice. And some of the like best scenes I've had in Blades in the Dark games have been where people are indulging their vice and said, hey, can you just like come along on this with me so I get the bonus die? And then some kind of fictional thing comes out of those two people being together.
Yeah.
So I want to give Blades that credit. But I really like making it more explicit. And I like, especially when you take away the scoundrel context in Brinkwood, like Brinkwood seems to be a game that is much less about destroying yourself as you try to build up a criminal empire. And in that context, indulging vice doesn't make as much sense. And that making the relationships importance more explicit, like more textually part of the way you are getting rid of the stress, I think is really smart and makes a lot of sense. And this isn't even the only game that's doing it. Beam Saber also famously has a pretty similar system.
Yeah. You were talking about like the criminal empire and destroying yourself. Is the first thing that came to my head when you said there was like the image of like Al Pacino in Scarface, right? Like, you know, you have like, he's just putting his face into the mountain of like a powder inside, and he's just like doing all kinds of self-destructive things because, and then of course, you know, like the post-Sopranos world in which we're all looking at like the emotional stress of being a criminal leader, right? Yeah, and Breaking Bad. So definitely there is that very evocative centering that moves there. And for Beam Saber, I mentioned it's also because PTSD from being often in anime, being a child soldier in a war machine that's like, you know, 30 meters tall and shooting like a nuclear-powered guns at people. I mean, that will basically require you to basically isolate, freak out, and have a lot of quiet moments. And there's something that you said about the favorite scenes about, you know, like sharing, indulging the vice with a friend, right? Like, I do actually also remember like a lot of good scenes coming out of this. Because I remember some friend had a vice was obligation. They had to go and help up the community. And then they say, hey, can you come along? And then it became one of those like very suddenly like in Blades, everybody's, you know, like killing and jumping. And then we have to go to this neighborhood to do a bunch of like soup kitchen stuff to help people out, right? Because that's the obligation to the community. But of course, the feeling of like where you say explicit in Brinkwood, basically there's no resource tax, right? You're not like, this is something that everyone does by default because the basic physics of the game is reconnect equals to minusing of stress. I do feel that by making it a universal move in this sense and changing the context of the stress recovery, it does lead to a very different implied world of what you're supposed to do to be functional, I think.
Yeah, in Blades, the relationship building is sort of a side effect of the vice that is destroying your life, presumably, in some regards. Whereas in Brinkwood, the relationship building is the thing that is allowing you to keep going on this mission to eat the rich.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about essence at all?
Oh, essence. Yeah, yeah. I mean, before we talk about essence, I think maybe we can talk about the stress in Brinkwood, like the reduced budget, right? Because that's where kind of essence flows in. You have less stress to work with compared to Blades, where it's 8 to 6, right? And so essence kind of plays into that because there's two related concepts to that. One is you have this thing known as a mask. So what is the mask? The mask is the mystical supernatural artifacts that are given to the characters by the fairies that they work with. And this thing's gotten access to supernatural powers. So essence is a kind of like a stress, but essence can only be used to power the master's special abilities. So some special abilities might be, for example, you can inspire anti-authority bravery. So maybe you have a whole bunch of peasants who are being oppressed by armed mercenaries, and then you're like, you know, let's all set up and we do that famous scene in Andor, right? Where everyone rushes at people, right? But that will cost you either stress or essence. So you can pay for it from essence. And essence, instead of being something which you accumulate as you get closer to an end state of less functionality, essence, you gain it by swearing an oath when you put on the mask. And the oath is dependent on the mask. So maybe it's like if you wear the mask of war and rage, you swear an oath to not let insults fly past you. You basically end up modifying your behavior again to get some supernatural energy that you can spend on getting supernatural powers. So when you fulfill the pact and you kind of like pay off this oath that you sworn, you basically also increase the master's powers that are transferred to whoever wears the mask next, not just to your personal character. So in a way, it's an organization XP or the crew, because you're building a long-term resource that's not tied to your character. You're distributing the stats out across to someone else as well. So essence is sort of like that budget that allows that to happen. And it's a bit like a credit card in which you basically sign the deal and then you have a budget to play with, and then you have to pay it off later. And then if you earn a credit rating and the bank likes you more, and then they give you more abilities. Yeah.
Yeah. That, I mean, I don't know. You kind of said it, right? Like, I think it's really interesting to put part of your stress meter onto this resource, the masks that get passed around from mission to mission. Is there anything else you want to say about stress or Brinkwood or Blades in the Dark in general?
Yeah, I think there's one last thing I'd like to talk about, which is I think you'll be remiss if I don't talk a little bit about the vampires. So instead of being just a toolbox image, okay, let's create a campaign, they give like a bunch of set of very specific kind of vampires that they kind of like depict and evoke different kinds of social and cultural problems, right? So you have a vampire as a warlord who is doing all kinds of industrial exploitation of the resources to make war machines, right? So you have basically the military-industrial complex as a vampire. Then you have like this high society vampires that all focus a lot on basically dancing and playing music as the world burns. And then you have vampires that are all based on gluttony. So they all have different campaigns and they all have different kind of like win conditions and lose conditions. And I think that's something that's quite cool, because even though the odds are against you, it does push it towards a narrative structure of, hey, there's something, you can take this book, you can open this book, you can play it instantly. It's a bit like Band of Blades, right? Where there's a campaign mode, get to this place by X day before the zombies eat you. So it's the same thing, which like, especially in this day and age where, you know, I don't really have the mental resources to plan a campaign. If I take this thing, it gives me a bit of scaffolding and I know, all right, this is where the implied play is supposed to be. This one's supposed to fight vampires, defang them, and maybe change the world for the better. So I do feel that Brinkwood, that's one angle that might be encouraging to, I guess, newer groups who might be a bit more intimidated by the directly open sandbox that's given to us sometimes. Like for me, I enjoy sandboxes, but I also enjoy basically this almost choose your own adventure game book style of design, right? For product design, where people are, hey, there's an end to this game, it's okay. Especially, I guess, as I get older and I have less and less free time to spend on RPGs, yeah.
Yeah, we love a campaign framework. It makes everyone's life easier. It gives you a end that you can go for, as you're saying, which also lets you sort of know how many sessions, how much time are you going to put into this story too? I think it's just a great tool for getting everyone in the group on the same page about what you're doing, what your plan
is. Yeah, for sure. The joke about the biggest challenge you have to face in any RPG group is everyone's conflicting schedules, right? Yeah. So things like that, like, oh, okay, I'm in this for 6 months. All right. So can I do that? Yeah. 6 months. Like, I got a kid coming in 9 months. Yeah, sure. I can do this. It's as opposed to the largely teenage life when we're playing, like, let's have 8 hour sessions every day. it's very different gig experience intersections.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Xiao, thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you very much, Sam. And I look forward to hearing the episode and also to work with you on other things again, if possible.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah.
Thanks again to Xiao for being here. Wow, remember how I said I'm doing a Kickstarter for the third season of Dice Exploder? You should still go follow that page to get notified when it's launching. You're about to take out your phone anyway to turn this podcast off, I assume. You might as well go follow the Kickstarter page while you're in the show notes. You can find Xiao on Twitter at TanXiaoHan, on Blue Sky at Big Prawn, and you can go to his website at TanXiaoHan.com, and all his games are there and such too. There's a Dice Exploder Discord. Come and talk about the show if you want to. As always, you can find me on Blue Sky, Twitter, Dice.camp, and Itch at S. Donnewald. Our logo was designed by Sporgory, and our theme song is Sunset Bridge by Purely Gray. And as always, thank you to you for listening. Follow my Kickstarter. See you next time.